Hour number two, Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game on this Monday. He's Big Joe Dubin, I'm Chase McCabe, Dr. Crane, Nick Frazier on the ones and twos. Usually he joins us on Tuesday, but nice enough to move to today for us. Here on this Monday, we say hello to Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst and the head coach over at Innsworth. How you doing, Tim?
Doing great. How you doing?
Doing fantastic. When are we going to see you and Matthew in some flag football?
Never.
No?
I mean, it's one of those sports. I know it's getting, I mean, everyone's promoting the heck out of it, and I mean, seems fun. I think I got my share when I was younger, like when my kids were younger, and I coached my daughter in it. I feel like it brings out the worst in people. I don't know, that's just if I can say it.
But does it surprise you and also, like, at the same time make you go, really, when you see Tom Brady go out there and, I mean, just be Tom Brady?
Yeah, I could see Brady being, like, amazing in it. And then I could see other people that are good football players struggle in it. Because while there's probably, you know, some carryover, there's also like a lot of things that would not carry over.
Yeah.
Like, so I could see Brady being great because he's he can anticipate, he's insanely accurate. And so for Brady, I think it could be great. For someone like Jalen Hurts, who's probably a better real quarterback than flag football quarterback, I could see it being a struggle. And then the similar thing with, you know, like pulling flags or running and not having your flags pulled, I think is very different than running and people trying to tackle you. So, you know, it's a little bit, to me, it's one of those things that's called football, but it's very, like, it's not football. You know, it's kind of like men's and women's lacrosse. Like, they're two totally different sports. Like, the equipment isn't even the same
yeah.
in sports. And so, like, that's how I think I feel about flag football. Like, to me, I don't know, almost would be better off with like a different name because it's not football.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's a fair point. I saw a little bit of it over the weekend and thought it was,
well, not to interrupt you. I mean, now I got my flag football guys coming out like, see, I could play in the NFL. And I'm like, there's no way in hell you could play in the National Football League if you think you're good at flag football doing this.
Well, I just like they're different sports, right? And see, like that's the part of it that I think is, you know, that can be confusing. They're like, oh, hey, see, it's the same. It's like, well, it's not.
Right.
Look, it's part of my issue with like the 7-on-7 culture that we're in right
yes.
now, and you know, with you know, especially with high school kids and stuff, because it's such a far departure from reality. In terms of actual football. So that to me, I think is, I'm cool with like finding another sport that ends up being fun and it can be televised and, you know, there can be TV contracts associated with it and it can be great. I'm also great with, you know, like women's flag is becoming much more of a thing. Right. And so, you know, you see these girls flag football teams, you know, popping up in, you know, in youth leagues and stuff. And then obviously even here in Tennessee, you're seeing them happen at high schools where they have, you know, girls flag football programs. And then there's opportunities in college for girls to play flag football. I think all of that stuff is awesome. And I'm excited for that type of thing. It just is. It's a completely different sport.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. Tim Hasselbeck is with us here on the program. Jackson Smith and Jigba, 4-year deal, $168.6 million contract. He surpasses Ja'Marr Chase now as the highest paid. I think well-deserved. Is he the best receiver in football right now?
Yeah, I think he makes a pretty good – you can make a good argument for him, and part of that is, you know, I have the info in front of me, but the – you know, Seattle was a run-first offense, but their passing game in terms of just how it stacked up, you know, throughout the league, like it was relatively productive. And the share of the passing game that JSM was a part of, in comparison to basically every other receiver in the league was different. And so that would lead you really to believe two things. One, they did a good job of designing ways for him to get open when everybody knew that he was going to be the guy getting the ball. And then two, you know, he was still able to make a lot of plays with attention, you know, given to him. So he's good playing as an inside receiver. You know, Seattle put him in the backfield at times to get him open. He was good playing outside the numbers. Great run after catch. You know, and I do think it's smart as you know, for a guy that's came into the league as, you know, a well-respected player, has produced, you know, rather than kind of drag your feet on getting deals like that done, it is better and probably less expensive to do the deal sooner rather than later.
So when you're a team like the Titans and you don't have that guy, no disrespect to the guys they do have, but they don't have that guy, is it, I mean, can they pull off what they need to pull off with a receiver by committee like they're going to have? And do you think that this receiver room is better than what they had last year?
I do think it's going to be better than what it was last year, you know, just with the, you know, the additions that have already been made. You know, there was a lot of inexperience last year. I mean, there was, you know, and I think probably just fair to say just a lot of underperforming as well. And I think some of it just overall probably dysfunction in the offense, change in leadership. You know, those things are the things that matter. You know, how do you stack them up? I think there are some teams where you look at them and you go, what an amazing receiving core. You know, any team would be lucky to have those guys. And I think there's other teams that aren't necessarily like that, right? So take look at the 49ers as the example a year ago. You know, the 49ers a year ago, because of what happened with Brandon Ayuk, I don't think anyone looked at them and thought, wow, like, we, you know, Juwan Jennings is a great player. But outside of that, and I guess you can throw Kittle into the mix, like, I don't know that people were salivating over the pass catchers in San Francisco. But I think they kind of got through it probably because of Kittle and because of how they could use Christian McCaffrey. So, you know, I don't think you have to have the best receiving core in the league, but I think you have to have guys that can win when they're called on to win. And, you know, and I think that, you know, Wandell Robinson probably, you know, has proved that he can do that in certain areas. I think there's probably still hope with, you know, Calvin Ridley in terms of, you know, what's left in the tank. And so I think you do – I don't think they're done addressing the position, and I do think that, you know, they probably have high hopes for some guys that are already there, but I think, you know, we'll see draft and maybe even free agency, still more things happen.
We're talking to Tim Hasselbeck on the Chase and Big Joe Show. Tim, I'm so glad we have you on because you used two words, and I'm going to back you up for a moment, to describe Tom Brady, which I've never heard before, but is so fascinatingly accurate when you said he is insanely accurate. Can you delve a little bit more into that? Because I've never heard Tom Brady been described that way.
Well, look, when you look at, you know, a completion, you can be like, oh, yeah, the guy caught it. It's like, all right, well, did he have to reach over his head to catch the football? You know, did he have to, you know, kind of turn his body and catch a ball that was behind him? You know, I think what Brady did – as a player that I think was better than, you know, really, I mean, anyone I can truly remember is like when a ball would protect a player from contact, or if a guy didn't have to reach for something because you could deliver the ball inside the frame of his body or put it on a shoulder, you know, to help turn him a certain direction. I just think that he's been better than everyone else at doing that. And there have been other incredibly accurate quarterbacks. You know, Joe Montana's got a reputation as being, you know, extremely accurate. Drew Brees was a really, really accurate passer. But I think Brady took it to a completely different level in terms of, you know, where he would locate the ball, you know, to a player, not just did he throw it to the right guy and was it catchable? You know, like, did you make it as easy as possible for the guy to catch the ball? Like, I think that's one of the things that separated Brady from other guys.
Can you teach that?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can. You know, I just remember hearing, you know, one of the coaching points I heard early on in Philadelphia from Andy Reid was, you know, when you throw to a receiver whose back is to the defense, right? So if there's a receiver who's facing the quarterbacks, right? So he's run a route where, you know, he stops and he now is facing the quarterback and his back is to the end zone that you're going to score in. You know, as a quarterback, you are that player's eyes now. And what that means is if you throw it to his left shoulder, then he should catch it on his left shoulder and then turn to the left. And like, you are his eyes, because what you are saying is not only have I identified you as open, but the closest defender is coming from, you know, because he's turned around, that receiver's right side. So throw it to his left shoulder so he turns away from that nearest defender. And so you can definitely learn the idea of, okay, hey, what are you focusing on, right? Now, can you actually, you know, execute that and make that throw? I mean, I think that, you know, I do think that you can get better at accuracy. I think identifying what is making you inaccurate, I think and fixing those things is, you know, a much deeper rabbit hole to go down. But, yeah, I mean, it's American Sniper. Aim small, miss small a little bit, right? Like,
right.
if you are just like, hey, I'm going to throw it to that guy who's got a 7-foot catch radius, sure, you can do that. Or if you're like, no, I'm going to put it on his left shoulder right now. Like, that's what I'm going to do. I do think there's a difference.
Is there a quarterback in the NFL today who's half of what Brady was as far as being insanely accurate?
Yeah, I mean, half of what he was? Yeah, because I think there are a lot of really good players. Like, I think Josh Allen and Mahomes are both really, really accurate players. I mean, I'll give you another guy that I think it's fair to say, you know, insanely accurate, Brock Purdy. I mean, Purdy's accuracy is really incredible. I think Matthew Stafford is an incredibly accurate passer. But, there are guys, it's like, hey, the way they're doing it, it's like, oh, yeah, like that's how you play quarterback. That's really, really good. And so, you know, like, I think you could make the argument with a guy like Purdy, his accuracy is one of the things that separates him from other guys.
We will have more with Tim Hasselbeck coming up next here on Chasing Big Joe, presented by the Omni Nashville Hotel on 102.5 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game here on this Monday. Continue with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. Tim, as I look at the latest round of mock drafts post-combine, I'm seeing Ty Simpson pop up in the first round quite a bit. What is kind of your post-combine evaluation of him? And I feel like he would be a work in progress in the league, but do you see enough that he could be a starting NFL quarterback?
Yeah, I think that there's enough there. There's potential he could be the starting quarterback. I mean, but the way that college football works now, if you become the starting quarterback at Alabama, then you're checking a lot of boxes to potentially become a starting quarterback in the NFL. It's just, that's going to be the nature of, you know, guys that are coming from big time programs that are, you know, if you're a top 10 program playing in some of those, you know, in the big moments and things of that nature, you're having success, then you're going to get an opportunity. And then, how good of an opportunity, all of that. I think some of it is going to be, you know, how, you know, the evaluation process goes for you. So, you know, for a guy like him, I think that, you know, there was some current concerns about, you know, just physically, how talented was he? How big was he? How strong was his arm? Like, what were there physical limitations that you should be concerned with? And I think that while he's not blowing you away like a Josh Allen kind of guy, he's, I think he's probably come across much more physically capable than I think what some people were anticipating. And then when you look at, you know, how he played really well. I mean, and he had moments where he was outstanding and then moments that were not incredible. And I think the biggest problem, you know, in terms of the evaluation of him, I think it falls into the sample size is not as big as you would like it to be.
Do you think teams watching what Sam Darnold just did and some other instances where we've seen a quarterback that maybe flames out early but sticks with it, goes in the right system and develops, is that going to help a team like, ironically, the Jets or the Raiders be more patient with some of these young guys to give them time, or is it going to continue to be this vicious cycle we've seen?
I think it'll be the vicious cycle because, you know, I don't think it's the organization's patience in the player that is making them move on. I think it's just the calendar of the rookie contract, resetting the rookie contract, the fifth-year option, or extending a player when you need to extend him and not feeling like you can commit starting quarterback money to somebody that you still, you know, are waiting for development on. So I think the cycle is going to continue to happen. I think what will it will encourage is people giving the high draft pick another chance, which I kind of feel like already was happening anyway. But I think it's I think it encourages that because, look, Geno Smith played at a starter level. He got another chance. Sam Darnold's obviously doing it. There are guys that have benefited from that other chance. Daniel Jones, it's happened for guys. I think that, you know, that's the part that you need to kind of figure out. And, look, I think you're going to probably see it with, or a chance you see it with Will Levis. Who's going to give him his next chance?
Yeah, I'm with you 100% on that. Let me ask you this. 2 weeks ago, the legal tampering started in free agency and everything. Mm-hmm. Juwan Jennings is still out there. I don't know the particulars and all that, but the longer he's out there, does that mean that's the closer he is returning to San Francisco? Because I don't know how this works.
I would guess so. And, you know, look, I don't know how it works either because I would have thought that people were excited to sign him. He is such a good player, and I think – one of the more underrated players in the league. You know, another guy who signed later than I thought was Darnell Mooney.
Yes.
Now, he's since signed, but I would have thought that there was going to be, you know, a stronger appetite to sign Mooney. So, maybe Mike Evans signing doesn't help him in San Francisco. So I don't know that it means that it leads to a return, but I think he's a really good player. To me, he's the perfect example of it wasn't in this first splash in big-time free agent signings and things like that. But when we look back at the end of the year, we're going to go, oh, my gosh, this guy had 80 catches and 7 touchdowns and think of all the big third-down conversions. How the heck were teams not lining up to sign him right at the beginning of free agency? I think he's that kind of player.
He's also become – I know Kittle has been a nice safety valve for Brock Purdy, but on 3rd and 5, Jennings is getting you 6 yards. I mean, he's getting you the first down. So I think it would help for Brock Purdy to have that option still with him as he gets better and better, and Jennings is that guy.
Look, I mean – we were just talking about the Titans, like, I mean, from around here. Like, I'd have him in as soon as I could. I mean, I think he's that good of a football player. Like, it just, to me, he's, what do they call it, a third in Juwan? Isn't that what they call it?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, like, he, to me, is a guy that, not early in terms of the signing, but in terms of the impact, massive impact, you know, on the football team.
I know it's still way too early, and I'm not a fan of is the window closing. I get all that stuff, but when I think about that now, and these 32 NFL teams, The Bills always come to mind. Am I wrong about this? Is their window closing a little bit?
I mean, potentially, you know, it's closing just because, you know, when you get changeover. But I do think anytime, you know, when Burrow had that comment of, you know, my whole career is the window or something like that.
Right.
And I do think there is an element to – I think there's an element to that where I think you always have a chance if you've got a superstar quarterback. I mean, you've always got a chance. And now, do you need more than that? Yeah. I mean, look at Cincinnati. Now Burrow's been hurt and stuff. But, like, I do think – look, Josh Allen had a chance this year, and I think it was the worst team that they've had in a long time. So – I think if you have an elite quarterback, I think if you have one of the top five guys in the game, then I think you always have a chance to be in the mix because you can probably win your division. You can probably, you know, you can probably stay alive to a certain level, you know, in terms of giving yourself a chance that if you play right at the right moment that, you know, that you can be a Super Bowl contending team.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And also about quarterbacks, I think this went way under the radar, but Andy Dalton going from the Panthers to the Eagles, what does that signify?
You know, I think, one, that they're a team that values, you know, signing a guy that has some experience and can play. Two, I think, you know, there's value in these veteran players. You know, Andy Dalton's, I mean, he's going to be in like year 15 or maybe more. You know, these veteran players and kind of the value add for them. And I think teams are, I do think it's important for teams to be smart about, you know, their quarterback room and how they address their quarterback room. I do think that that's, you know, kind of what it means. So it's, you know, no different than Mitch Trubisky, you know, here in Tennessee. There's a reason for that. And, you know, I think certain coaches that have an affinity to certain players and, you know, the impact beyond just playing that they have on the team, you know, that's why, you know, stuff like that happens. So, you know, what it means for guys like Kenny Pickett and kind of their career, Case Keenum be another guy.
Right.
And, you know, the value that guys can add, you know, beyond just being the starting quarterback.
Hey, our question of the day is favorite or greatest sports moment for your favorite team. What's the greatest sports moment for Boston College ever, in your opinion?
Oh, forever for BC was beating Notre Dame when they were the number one team. And I think you had asked me about that.
Yeah, that's
like
right.
Last time. So like that's the biggest BC moment, probably even more so than Flutie's Hail Mary.
No, get out of here.
Those would be, I mean, you beat the number one team in the country, like right after they beat Florida State on a kick at your rival. Like, I mean,
right.
I mean, to me, that's, that, you know, that one would be it. So yeah, that would be it for BC.
That's a good one, but I'm going to go back. The Flutie one. Come on, man. That's what we all talk about.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you can only choose one. So when right. you choose one, it doesn't mean you're taking a shot at the other.
Right.
So that's like the biggest sports center trick on the planet. Like, make a list of the top five guys. It's like you make a list. Well, it's like number six is, you know, whatever, Mike Evans. You're like, why do you think Mike Evans stinks? I'm like, no, I don't. He was sick. I'm like, what are we talking about? Like, you had to draw the line somewhere. It's like a wedding guest list.
Right.
You know? Like,
yeah.
At some point, you're like, no, I like you. I just... Yeah, I'm related to these other people. Like they got invited before you.
Yes. By the way, the Flutie Hail Mary should have not been allowed. Do you know why that play was illegal? And they used to call this back in the 80s.
Flutie, was there a lineman downfield?
No. Flutie put his mouthpiece in his sock. There's a pitcher, and they were like, they knew it. And they could have called that play dead. And they did.
For uniform violation?
Yes.
Hey, yeah, no, you know what? Hey, in this year, in high school football, we had, on two different occasions, kids get sent off the field because they have their mouthpiece in.
I see it. I'm 100% behind that.
Really? Yeah. You know what's crazy about that? Like, these guys that play with no mouthpiece, I couldn't imagine not playing with a mouthpiece.
Right.
Yeah, like, and who do you yes. in that moment as the coach get more mad at, the kid or the ref?
Oh, the kid, 100%. 100% the kid. They're like, dude, what are you doing? Like, put your mouthpiece in. What are we talking about here?
Yeah.
Like, oh, and then the thing that gets me is the kids that don't even mold their mouth guard.
Yes.
Like, really? Yeah. Like, is that, like, I just, whatever, put some water in a microwave, soften that thing up and mold it so you can actually, like, talk a little bit.
Well, that's one of the greatest things ever was when youth football was taking that to your mom and she boils it in the pot and you got your mouth. That is a great moment in youth sports. Hey,
and then you really made it when you can cut off the strap that hooks onto your face mask.
Yes.
And it's just free. Because you know there's no germs on those things either. That's
none at all. Tim, appreciate the time as always, and thanks for moving for us. We'll talk to you next week.
See you, fellas.
That's Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, joining us on the program. Usually Tuesdays at 1, but nice enough to move because we'll have something cool coming tomorrow.
And we got a word now. I mean, insanely accurate. I love that description of Tom Brady. Yeah. I love that, how he described Tom, insanely accurate.
Yep, that is a good one. Full show.
Full show.
We'll have more coming up next. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game.